Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout. It's a podcast. You know that. Get on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. All of our shows are hosted on our epically curated website, WBGO.org, the home of 88.3 FM, produced in Newark, New Jersey. I'm Simon Rentner. Well, on today's show, we're going to celebrate a certifiable jazz legend, upright bassist who left us, Gary Peacock, from a conversation in 2014 at the Montreal Jazz Festival. But before we bring you that, I just want to pose a question to you. Why do you listen to The Checkout? Or why do you listen to WBGO? Because you hear music you don't hear anywhere else. Where else are you going to hear a tribute to Gary Peacock? On this show, we try to push the music forward, of course, but in cases like this, we like to honor some of the music makers of the past. And it's a way for you to stay connected through the entire continuum, your favorite music we call jazz. So if you value this show, if you value this podcast, I'm telling you that you really need to step up right now and support us. We don't do it very often. Keep The Checkout on the air and in your podcast feed for another year. And you can make a contribution right now by going to 1-800-499-9246, or better yet, go to wbgo.org/support, wbgo.org/support. Make sure to give me a shout out, Simon Rentner, and The Checkout. Or text us at WBGO to 56512. Text WBGO to 56512. And thanks. On September 4th, 2020, the upright bassist Gary Peacock left us. He was 85, passed away from his home in Olive Bridge, New York. Many of us know him with his three-decade run with the legendary Keith Jarrett Standards Trio. And although I would have loved to talk to him about that, the time I got the chance to sit down with him with Mark Copeland was in 2014 at the Montreal Jazz Festival, and I really only had 15 to 20 minutes with him, but he did say a lot in that time, including talking about playing with Albert Eiler, for instance, and meeting Lester Young. And as just one of the formidable double-bassed improvisers, just being in the moment in general. That year, he released a trio recording called Now This, featuring Gary Peacock, of course, with Mark Copeland and the drummer Joey Barron. We bring you our conversation with Peacock and Copeland now. Joining me at the Montreal Jazz Festival, bassist Gary Peacock, pianist Mark Copeland. They have a trio they call Now This. What is this?
Exactly. Now This, why the name of the group is Now This?
This, just a trio? Now This?
Now is basically, I was looking for something that captured the spirit of what we, the three of us, do together. And if you're going to be now and you're playing music, rather than there or then or whatever, that basically implies that you're willing to just let go of everything else except the music right now. Just constantly be now. This is all there is anyway. I mean, at any point that you want to look at in music or anywhere, all it really is this, whatever this happens to be. So I get a sense of that from both Mark and Joy, is like there's a commitment internally to just be right now, and this is what we're doing. So we're not bringing anything extraneous to the performers or to the music, just letting the music happen.
Thank you. Gary Peacock, being in the moment, being consumed by the moment, is something that has concerned you for a very long time, dating back to your philosophical studies in Japan?
It's been a constant guideline. I think probably for me the most striking example of that or introduction to that was with Miles Davis, when I worked with, the short time I worked with him. One of the lessons that I received from him, although we didn't talk about it, is how he could be in one mental state before he walked up to the bandstand. And it could be anger, it could be whatever. But once he got up on the stand and put the horn in his mouth, he left all that behind. It was gone. All that existed was right now. And you can hear it in his playing. He's not bringing anything up with him on the bandstand. It's just about the music right now, nothing else. Don't be thinking about how good am I going to sound, or am I really being showing integrity, nothing personal, just this, now. I hear that in his play, and I hear it in Joey's play. There's no agendas.
Do you think there's a lot of agendas in jazz?
Yes.
Probably.
Mark Copeland, yeah. What are the agendas in jazz?
Well, I don't know if I want to speak to that, but what I can speak to is the lack of agendas in the music of this trio and the playing of this trio. So that, I mean, Gary and I have been playing together on and off for, I guess, over 30 years. And from the first time, I mean, the first two chords we played together, you know, I remember we were in Seattle, and, you know, I was basically just a kid, you know, and I was very honored to be playing with him, but I was also kind of scared, you know. I sat down, he was playing something, so I played some kind of funny chord, which I thought sounded neat with it, and then he played something else, I played some kind of another funny chord that I thought went with that, and then I looked up and he was grinning ear to ear because he was just into what was happening right then. And that's when you find somebody like that who feels that same way about the music, it's great. And then when we started playing with Joey, it was like, for me, it was like the missing piece of the puzzle, you know, and now it all fits.
Gary Peacock, Mark Copeland, something I just thought about from reading both of your biographies. You both kind of have this parallel moment in your lives where you go through extreme transition. For you, Gary, you decided that you weren't going to play the bass publicly for a long period of time. You decided to go to Japan and do some other studying in biology and in religion. For Mark, you played the saxophone. You were successful at it. You played with Albert Ayler, Gary Peacock. Mark Copeland, you were playing with Michael Brecker. You were playing with John Abercrombie. You have almost this, what is some call this kind of cultish album that was released that was very critically acclaimed. And then you said, no, the saxophone isn't for me. Is that something that maybe brought you both together, this kind of parallel life story?
Using the word decide, when you use that word, when I decided to do this, and when Mark decided to do this, or like that, that's a kind of a tricky word, the decision, because that's come up before in interviews with other people. Why did you stop playing at a particular time and then not come back to it for 4 or 5 years in terms of like a career, you know? And sometimes things happen that we only use the word decide as a convenience. It's more like there's a shift that occurs, and if you're available for that shift, you recognize it, you simply move in that direction. Mark, you know, has already mastered saxophone, okay? He wakes up one morning, can't get up with a saxophone, I'm going to have to play piano. That's the only way it's going to happen. I just know that, you know? You know, there's not really a decision right there, maybe. And everybody's saying, Jesus, we got Bill Evans out there and Herbie Hancock, and man, you're going to start out at 30 years old playing piano? I mean, give me a break, man.
Well, I don't think there's actually, especially in the history of jazz, there isn't really a precedent for that, especially coming from playing like a saxophone, which is a completely different instrument than the piano.
Lester Young was a drummer. He gave his drums to his brother Lee because he got tired of carrying them. You know what, in my case, it really wasn't about the piano. It was about a certain feeling and certain colors and certain harmonies, and the best way to access that seemed to be the piano at that time. It wasn't perfect, you know, but it was the best thing I could find, you know. The only other candidate at that time would have been guitar, and that it wasn't quite right.
That's Loose Tune, Mark Copeland playing the tenor saxophone with John Abercrombie, Clint Houston, and Jeff Williams from a 1972 recording called Friends. We're speaking with Mark Copeland and Gary Peacock at the Montreal International Jazz Festival. Well, speaking of Lester Young, I understand, Gary Peacock, that you once met Lester Young.
I met him just like 6 months before he died. Shortly before he died, a friend of his said, Lester, there's a new kid on the block, man, you ought to check him out. Saxophone player. So they go down to the club, I'm not going to tell you the saxophone player, and they listen to the set. So when they got through to playing their set, he said, it's Lester Young, this is my friend. And he goes, well, Lester Young, whoa. He said to Lester, he said, wow, you know, this is really an honor, and anything that you can say about my playing will be deeply appreciated, and anything, you know. And Lester sat there for a minute, and he finally said, oh, sure can play that horn. Any tempos, any kind of chord changes, always in tune. But tell me, what's your story? And at that period in history, story was a word that was used in a very special way. You could hear it all over the place, like early 50s. I'd hear this over again. Yeah, man, he can play, but man, he don't tell no story at all, man. So it was the word story was used as in the context of listening to somebody and being blown away by him. And whoa, that was some hell of a story. You can't articulate it. You can't put it into words. But that's what they call the story in many black communities. So, question, is the guy not telling his story? Or is Lester Young too old to get what that story is? But it brings up this intuitive aspect. All the technical aspects are taken away, what's left. When the facility to play your instrument is no longer really critical. Whether you're in tune even, sometimes not critical. When your knowledge is not critical, what's left? And the other one that they use, which I learned later, I can't use as a word, is dig. Can't do it. Don't have the history. But, you know, once you hear somebody like Albert Eiler just talking to somebody, he says, dig it, man. Yeah, dig it. You realize, like, oh, this has got a history behind it that I don't have. But what he's pointing at is the same thing. In fact, Albert Irons, you bring that up. There's one phrase that he used over and over again that I really like. Because people would come up and they say, man, what are you guys doing? You know, what is this stuff you're playing, you know? And he said, they'd say, is it this, is it that, and is that, is it? Oh man, don't make it be about that. It ain't about nothing, man. It ain't about nothing. And the guy said, well, but other than while you're doing it, one of his choice phrases, he said, yeah, man, he said, and critics, they always want to make something about something. Don't they know it ain't about nothing? And but what he's pointing at is that ineffable, that experience that a person can have that you can't articulate, you can't name it, you can't define it, and yet it's real, it's right there in front of you all the time. In a musical standpoint, it's non-referential. It doesn't refer to something else. It's not like a statue refers to something, it's like, oh, but music doesn't refer to anything but the music. So when you start to talk about it, you have to enter another world where it's subjective, and it's difficult. And that's why Albert would say, it ain't about nothing. He did the one critic, the guy came over, and I'm watching him, they're about 50 feet away, and I'm watching to see what's gonna happen. And so, whoever this reviewer was asked him a question, and he just picked up his phone and started playing Ghost. And so, and I went up to him after that, and then the critic left. The reviewer just left. And so I asked him, what happened, man? Was you okay? And he said, yeah, no problem. He says, but what, he asked you a question? He said, he asked me a question. He said, he would like to know where the music is really emanating from. I said, I would just start playing. So the guy didn't get his answer. He wanted something he could comprehend with words. And I would just throw my
Albert Eiler's Ghosts, featuring bassist Gary Peacock with Sonny Murray on drums. From Eiler's recording, Spiritual Unity, from 1964. I spoke to Gary Peacock and the pianist Mark Copeland at the 2014 Montreal International Jazz Festival. Well, something about each of your playing that I've enjoyed about over the years and that separates you from other players is this inherent generosity. You're willing to put the limelight beside your cohort. You're willing to reshift focus anywhere at all times. And it has this very just graceful, humble approach to the music.
As long as you don't make a rule out of it, then you're stuck again.
Can you ever give too much in jazz?
No. You can't give too much.
Or in music?
No, music in general. I mean, what I can ask, I asked myself this question years ago, and I think it's still a good question. We never know when we're going to die, right? So when we're up on stage playing, we don't know if the next note we play is the last note we'll ever play in our life. Where do you want to be? When do you want to be? Do you want to be then, or do you want to be now? What's going on with you at that point? How much of your life are you willing to give to the music? And during the bebop period, for example, or even before then, but there was a dynamic that happened very often in jazz, is you had to establish a personality. Once you established that personality, people got to know you, it opened up venues for employment. So someone could listen to a record and say, I know who that is. So let's go, he's gonna be at this club tonight. Well, what happens in that case is that for the artist and the musician, they enter into a mindset, as it was, that they have, that their role is to maintain that image that they have created. In other words, don't be now, be then, and don't play this, play that. And their growth stops. The actual musical development of that person has to stop because they're no longer now. They're no longer available for the moment.
So if all of you are so intent in being in the moment, listening to each other,
that's the purpose.
Creating music that has meaning for yourself, how do you know that the audience is getting it?
That's not our job. That's the audience's job. There's no, we don't have an investment in like how to please the audience. You know, if you're present and you're right now and the band is doing what it's doing, you're gonna go like that, because it's, you know, that's what people want. It's like, for example, if we say, okay, I'm gonna go up and I'm just gonna be now, and all I'm gonna do is this, right? It's dead. There's no life there at all. There's nothing. It's just, you're trying to live up to a standard. How can you be authentic and spontaneous if you're trying to live up to a standard? Can't do that. You know, so you get up and play, and let's say you're playing along, and we've all done it, and you make a mistake, or harmonically, it's like, what do? Try to correct it and be then? Or you simply get it and keep on moving and keep on playing?
Gaia from Gary Peacock's trio recording with Joey Barron and Mark Copeland on ECM. I spoke to him in 2014. Gary Peacock, rest in peace. We will miss you. If you enjoyed this show, well, before I tell you to subscribe to the podcast, what you really need to do is to go to wbgo.org/support. and give some money to show your support. This is a public radio station. Where else are you gonna hear programming like this with Gary Peacock, for instance? So if you can, go to wbgo.org/support or call us at 1-800-499-9246. That's 1-800-499-9246. And you can even text now, make it super easy on yourself. Text WBGO to 56512. Follow us on social media. At Checkout Jazz is our Twitter handle. We also have a Facebook page. Thank you for supporting this public radio station. Thank you for supporting The Checkout. It really means a lot. Sincerely, The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rentner. Thanks for checking us out.